This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. We'll begin today with Brussels. The Belgian capital is in shock following a series of terrorist attacks that killed more than 30 people and injured at least 230 more. Two blasts ripped through the airport earlier this morning. An hour later, a bomb struck a subway car in the heart of the city near EU headquarters. The Islamic State, or ISIS, claimed responsibility for the bombings, which came 4 days after the capture of the alleged mastermind of the November attacks in Paris. Belgium's Prime Minister, Charles Michel, called the latest attacks blind, violent, and cowardly. President Obama, in Havana, Cuba, called them outrageous attacks against innocent people. Let's begin with reaction from Massachusetts Congressman Bill Keating. He's a Homeland Security expert, the ranking member on the Terrorism Subcommittee of the Foreign Affairs Committee. We spoke with him a short time ago. I asked him for his reaction to today's events.
Well, number one, I'm a former DA and who worked with victims who lost loved ones. And you think of that first and you say, my God, the tragedy that's just so widespread. And I thought back to my time last year when I was in Brussels. At that point, there was a high alert going on there. And I saw every street corner had a soldier with automated weapons, things that we don't see here in the U.S. They live with that and have been living with it. So this is something that going back, you know, for concrete examples, the Jewish museum that was bombed, I thought back to that. I thought of them canceling their New Year's Eve celebration that brings hundreds of thousands into that square that I think a lot of tourists have been in before in Brussels. And then I thought, as most Americans, selfishly, I guess, how's this going to affect us?
Of course, this attack is the latest reminder of the sophistication of the Islamic State's ability to strike in the heart of Europe. We saw that in Paris last November. But what about vulnerabilities here in the U.S.? In the wake of this attack, what are you most concerned about?
Well, Anthony, you're right. I mean, it's one more example of their external arm and ISIS's ability to reach beyond borders. This is clearly a coordinated effort that was going on among several terrorists, I believe, akin to what Paris was, and with maybe some of the same planning. We'll see how that works out. But in San Bernardino, for instance, ISIS did it in an inspirational way. They inspired action for a homegrown type of terrorist. And that's what we face for our primary concern in the U.S. still. That's that greatest threat if you're going to put a ranking on them. Also, I thought of airport security because I've been working for years now on airport security, and one of the things I asked for was a federal study to assess where we were on airport security because I was concerned that we were being too narrow in our viewpoint of just focusing our security on that choke point that is the gate that we go through with the electronic equipment. And indeed, today's attack occurred in the departure area, a separate area. That report will be public, I think, in the next week or so. But what it will say, it has been finalized, is that we have to take a risk assessment of airports in a much broader footprint than we are now.
Would that mean a security ring around the outside of an airport, around the outside of a departure terminal or something like that?
I think, there's already security in place dealing with that, but I think we should, in my own opinion, we should elevate that. But I think that can be done on a more sporadic basis. I think we can use canines more, and that will actually improve the flow of people through the lines that are waiting for delays through security, having more canine kind of capabilities. But it'll also mean looking at the exit areas after people leave, where people kind of let their guard down, maybe, and it also will mean we have to be looking at, as we did in Boston just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, other types of public transportation besides airports, because one of the targets today was the metro. That presents a different challenge because the access to that, there's not really many choke points into public transportation, buses, and it's much more wide open.
It seems like it also raises that challenge about sort of adhering to that fine line between as much security as possible without giving up too much, right?
It is. And one thing that's important, particularly with rail and bus service, if people are a part of the security network there, if they see something that raises a concern, they should tell someone.
Right.
The other thing to remember, too, they selected that particular metro. Having been there myself, it's right across from the U.S. Embassy. It's right across from the center in the EU, their headquarters. And the people that were coming in and out of that metro included officials and people from all over the world. So that, I think, made it a target that they would find one of opportunity. And
Congressman, let me ask you about this. The Obama administration still has not offered a strategy, a comprehensive strategy, to defeat ISIS. And today, Defense Secretary Ash Carter told the House Armed Services Committee that delivery of that strategy was imminent. But he was chided by the chair of the committee. Congressman Thornberry of Texas scolded him for missing a deadline. Is the U.S. responding too slowly to this threat? Does that worry you?
Well, the facts are these, that we have, as part of a coalition, we have significantly shrunken their area. Their caliphate, the actual land that they control. We've also taken out many of their leaders. We're also, and we're a little slow to this, but we're coming around, taking out their sources of income. I've been working on their use of artifacts and trading in those where they get millions and millions of dollars, taking out the oil transport that they have there, disrupting what they're doing.
That said, Congressman, it does, you know, on days like this, when innocent people are killed, and these so-called soft targets make it seem as though a determined terrorist group can pretty much strike at will. I mean, it does raise the question, can Europe and the U.S. defeat this kind of determined enemy? What do you think?
I think we can make progress or continue to make progress in doing it. We are smarter. After the Boston Marathon bombings, I led a group in Homeland Security that for a year looked at what mistakes we made, and we made mistakes. Those mistakes have been corrected, both policy changes and statutory changes. One of the criticisms in Belgium has been that the security officials there do not share information with local police in Belgium. That was a problem with the Boston Marathon bombing. It was a problem ever since 9/11. It was one of the recommendations that, and we've changed that. So have we improved the situation? Absolutely. Do we face new challenges because of encryption? And when we make changes, they make other changes? Yes. And make no mistake, this is a real challenge globally. When something happens in Brussels, it affects us here in the U.S. And
indeed. All right. Well, that's Massachusetts Congressman Bill Keating. He's a Homeland Security expert, the ranking member of the Terrorism Subcommittee of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman Keating, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony.
And we're joined now by two national security experts. Jessica Stern is a professor at Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies and former member of the National Security Council. She joins us today from Amsterdam. And Professor Stern, good to have you back on Radio Boston. Welcome.
Thank you.
Also with us is Max Abrams. He's professor of political science at Northeastern University and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And Professor Abrams, thank you for joining us as well. It's good to have you.
Thanks.
And listeners, we want to invite you into this conversation. What are your thoughts about the events in Brussels? What questions do you have about how to stop this kind of terrorism, about security abroad, and of course, security here in the U.S.? If you have questions, we've got two very knowledgeable experts here to share their thoughts. So give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Jessica Stern, I'd like to start with you. You're in the Netherlands, of course, which borders Belgium to the north. Quick reaction from you. What are you thinking about today in the wake of this latest and this awful attack in Brussels?
Well, I feel terribly sad. It's just so sad that this is happening. And I guess that would be my number one feeling. I also worry a lot about how much ISIS wants us to overreact and how much we'll play into their agenda if we give in to the impulse to retaliate or feel prejudice against ordinary Muslims who are, in fact, the primary target of ISIS.
And Professor Abrams, same question to you. I'd love to get a quick response to you. What's your response about what happened?
I echo Jessica Stern. I mean, if anybody who looks at this, you can't help but feel, you know, very sad. You can also, you know, sympathize, empathize, imagine, you know, being in that airport or at that metro. But in addition to that, you know, speaking from Boston, I think about, you know, what will the effect be on the American political system? And it really didn't take long at all. I mean, Trump woke up this morning, he saw the news, and, you know, within minutes he was releasing statements about how, you know, these kinds of attacks justify waterboarding and other kinds of torture, and it reinforces his political beliefs about sealing off our border to all Muslims. So, the terrorism world is all linked and interrelated, from, you know, Belgium to France to the Netherlands, even to the American political system. Hmm. Everybody's paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about the particular vulnerability, I guess, that Belgium and Brussels, that Brussels represents. Jessica Stern, why Brussels? I mean, why was this such an attractive target, if I can term it that way, for ISIS to go after?
Well, Belgium is the number one source for recruits for jihadis now in the European Union. Many of the Muslims living in Belgium are guest workers, are children of guest workers who were not integrated. There's a high level of poverty and a feeling of disenfranchisement, and this is an exciting opportunity for jihadi groups.
Sure.
There was also a homegrown jihadi group actively recruiting, claiming its goal was to turn Belgium into a Sharia-based state. This was going on for years.
Hmm. I want to ask you, too, about the timing, and we've made note of the fact that this attack just came a few days after the arrest of someone who was believed to be very much involved in the planning of the Paris attacks back in November. And I think for a lot of people, this is sort of a chilling detail, because it sort of feels like ISIS has the ability to reach into the heart of Europe and almost attack at will. Jessica Stern, I'd love you to respond to that idea, and then I'll come to you, Professor Abrams. But Professor Stern, what do you think?
Well, it seems unlikely this was an attack carried out in revenge. It was a fairly sophisticated attack. An attack at an airport is not really a soft target, and a coordinated attack, it's not possible to pull that off in a matter of hours. This must have been an attack that was planned for some time. And we know that Brussels was closed down because of their concern by Belgian officials about the possibility that some of the Paris attackers were still at large and were planning another attack. Belgian officials have been very open about their concern that this might happen. An attack was likely imminent.
Yeah. Max Abrams, do you have thoughts about that as well? Just about the timing of this attack coming so close to the arrest of
sure.
the Paris suspect.
So, I mean, it's interesting because it seems to me that capturing a terrorist, as what happened 4 days ago, has cross-cutting effects on a terrorist organization. On the one hand, you could say that it may mildly reduce the group's capability because you're getting an important terrorist off the streets. On the other hand, even though its capability is slightly reduced, there's probably greater motivation to to mount an operation in order for the group to show that it's still around and is still able to inflict pain. So I agree with Jessica Stern. I don't think that the attack was, you know, just out of vengeance. I think that it was in the works, but I don't necessarily think that the timing was totally coincidental. I think that perhaps they expedited their plan. Perhaps it was supposed to, you know, happen a week from now. But I also agree with your point that it does seem like these groups can strike with impunity. I mean, the Belgian officials were on high alert over the past, you know, couple weeks, especially in the past 4 days. And it's pretty worrisome that Islamic State could strike a target which is relatively defended in the airport especially. never mind a purely soft target. So, frankly, you know, we're not. This is an ongoing operation. There are raids going on. My understanding, all over Belgium, there's a sense that the network isn't all wrapped up, and so we may actually see even more attacks quite soon.
Listeners, we're talking to Max Abrams. He's a professor of political science at Northeastern University, and Jessica Stern, professor at BU's Pardee School of Global Studies, about the terrible events in Brussels today. If you've got questions, give us a call, 800-423-8255. And Jessica and Max, we've got some callers on the line. I'd like to bring them in. Let's go to Chris, who's calling from Carver. Hi, Chris. You're on the air. What's your question?
Hey, how are you doing? I was just wondering what level of transparency the Belgium and U.S. government intelligence communities had with each other, and if that's going to be increased after today's attacks.
So the idea of sharing intelligence between the U.S. and European countries like Belgium. Jessica Stern, is that something you want to tackle?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm guessing that the level of transparency increased after the Paris attacks, but I don't know.
Mm. Max Abrams, I mean, Chris raises an interesting question because I gather sort of one of the sort of challenges in Europe. I mean, he's talking about intelligence sharing between the U.S. and Europe, but one of the challenges within Europe is intelligence sharing within the European Union, right? I mean, this seems to be a bit of a challenge because they're not completely synchronized with each other, these various countries.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real sense that everybody's in this together. You know, there's a terrorist attack in Belgium, and, you know, security goes up in Los Angeles, Chicago, New York. You know, the U.S. and Belgium, they're allies. I think that they're certainly sharing all of the intelligence that they have. But the more important, I think, bilateral relationship, if you will, is probably between France and Belgium. In the Charlie Hebdo attack, my understanding is that some of the weapons came from Belgium. In the so-called Paris attacks, several of the perpetrators were based in Belgium. So I know that there's a particularly high levels of cooperation between France and Belgium right now. I wouldn't be surprised if the French are a little bit annoyed with the Belgians for basically allowing this, you know, these jihadist neighborhoods to fester so much.
Mm. What about, I want to move on to another subject, and Jessica, I'll come to you about this, and that is what lessons we should draw here. You know, at the beginning of this break, at the beginning of the program, we were talking to Congressman Bill Keating. And, you know, one of the points he raised was concern about U.S. airports, indeed about U.S. Subway systems. And he's recommending that plans be put in place to make those targets a little harder to hit. Is that the kind of lesson that should come out of this attack in Brussels? Jessica Stern.
You know, it's hard for me to say at this point. I feel I need some more information before I would make a recommendation. But I can say that ISIS has a much harder time recruiting local operatives in the United States. Muslims in the United States are in fact happier with the direction the country is going than other Americans. And they feel, according to polling, that they have a better life in the United States than they would in Muslim-majority countries. So this is very, very different from what we see in Europe, and especially in Belgium and, frankly, the Netherlands.
Right.
And France.
And I guess it's important to, I mean, although we have some experience in this country with terrorist attacks, it's a very different kind of terrorist attack. I mean, I think Congressman Keating made this point. If you look at San Bernardino, it was more an inspired attack as opposed to operatives coming on these shores and doing something.
So that's right. And there's no doubt we will continue to see these so-called lone wolf attacks. That will happen. But it's important for listeners to remember that the likelihood of any one individual falling prey to a terrorist in an attack like that is minuscule. It's minuscule.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point to bring up on a day like this. Max Abrams, I'd love to get your response to that. That is, I mean, I think on a day like this, everybody's talking about that. You're seeing the images on the television. You're reading about this online. It's easy to believe just how vulnerable we all are. But Jessica Stern makes the point that we're still talking about a relatively small risk.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. That's true in certainly the vast majority of countries in the world. Really, just a handful of countries account for the lion's share of terrorist attacks. Not only is the likelihood of being struck by terrorism small, but it should also be said that the nature of the terrorism threat is different in the United States. We're learning really how big this network was that participated in the Paris attacks, and that extended well into Belgium, into other places. I don't know what the total tally is, but as of yesterday, I think it was being said that about 30-plus people were part of that network. And it seems to me, based on today, that the network actually extends even deeper and that we don't even really know where it ends. And so that's really very different than, say, the San Bernardino attackers, where we're talking about a couple. So a lot of people, they understandably in the United States want to know, you know, will the same sort of thing happen in U.S. cities as what happened in Brussels? And I actually don't think it would shake down that way because, simply stated, there isn't that kind of manpower in the United States. There aren't that many operatives who could link up with each other and have the operational security to maintain the secret away from the government. A network that size, I'd be shocked if it existed in the United States. And so, frankly, we're much better off when it comes to counterterrorism against Islamic State than these European countries.
Hmm. We only have a couple minutes to go here, and I'd like to ask you both one final question. This is such a fresh story, and obviously our hearts go out to the folks in Brussels. There's a lot we don't know, and things will become clearer in the days ahead. But what questions remain, Jessica Stern? I mean, what are the sort of one or two most important questions that you want answers to as we move forward?
Well, I do think the main question is about the network in Europe. Where, how many people are involved? How far does it spread? Who's linked with whom? How easy is it for operatives to get back from ISIS-controlled territory to Europe? What about Libya? These are the kind of questions that I'd be asking.
Right. Max Abrams?
Oftentimes in situations like this, we want to know more about the relationship in particular between the leadership and the operatives. You know, we want to know to what extent was this directed by the leadership? Was this hatched in Mosul or Raqqa, for example, or was it inspired? And we want to know down the road, where is this group going? Are they going to really successfully set up shop in Libya? Are they going to continue to deteriorate in their stronghold of Iraq and in Syria? And basically, will our successes against the organization in these places, will it finally really cut into their ability to recruit internationally?
And cut in their ability to launch the kind of attacks that we saw this morning in Brussels. Big questions from Max Abrams, professor of political science at Northeastern University and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Professor Abrams, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And Jessica Stern, professor at BU's Pardee School of Global Studies and former member of the National Security Council. She joined us today from Amsterdam. Professor Stern, thank you as well.
Thank you.
And listeners, feel free to continue this conversation at radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.